Hello, and welcome to Vetted, our podcast, where we are your go-to resource for all things education technology. I'm your host, Mark Vetter, and I'm thrilled to have you back on this journey. Today, we're going to interview Jeff Wheat. He is the CTO of Lumu, and his journey through government, through multiple different private enterprises, to Lumu, where he now assists K-12 schools in fighting the bad guys. And Jeff has an interesting story. And just to let you know, we're two old retired educators, thus you are in trouble, I think. So Jeff, welcome, and tell us about just how'd you get to CTO Lumu?
Oh, well, a long and winding path. I grew up in a small town in Southeast Kansas. My father was a teacher and a coach, and eventually became city commissioner and mayor when his athletes got old enough to care about voting. But so I kind of come from I was raised in the education kind of environment, background, whatever. Kind of came out of that. Went to University of Kansas. NSA came and got me out of the University of Kansas back before anyone knew who they were. They called it No Such Agency back then. I literally thought it was NASA when they called. They didn't. That was funny. But so I kept rolling with it. I kept asking if all their astronauts took these polygraphs and stuff. So. But in and out of that world, around the world, lived overseas, stuff like that. Coming back, I was a principal with a company called International Network Services. I ran the wireless practice and some other practices, wrote a book on it. Built large threat intelligence cells for the healthcare sector. I've also run Anheuser-Busch's Global SOC. A little more recently, I was a CISO running an incident response company. And stuff, so a lot of operational background from all that. And then recently, as the CTO of Lumu, I say I'm kind of the speaker in chief, because I do attend all our conferences and speak at them and stuff, so, but mostly because of that operational background. So that's where I'm at, and it's where Lumu's we put in special projects or programs for schools as a result of that. It's not a fair fight. It started off as nation states going after schools because they were infrastructure as hearts and minds, after 9/11, after COVID, no one could stand to have their kids not educated, rightfully so. We've got a whole generation of kids that are going to struggle in math and English as a result of it, So the nation states that are against us, realize that, went after it. And in the process, those threat actors, they're kind of, they're like mercenaries, if you want to think of it that way. They're in it for profit, but they'll do things, so that they don't get extradited and thrown in our prisons. So in the process of doing that, they realize the value of the student data record. And right now, a student data record's worth more than a health record, which is worth way more than a credit card record, right? And the reason being is kids don't, they're not going to check their credit reports for another 10, 15 years, right? So you got a 10, 15 year run of opening credit cards, buying cars, whatever, you're going to do with it. So it's really created a cottage industry, because I know a lot of educators think, oh, we're in education, we don't have any money. Said, well, for one, when you're not teaching the students, it's amazing where they find money. So, that's not true. And the other is the double value of the data that they're going after. And then we can go into a whole list of reasons why, the public sector in general are easy targets, wide, diverse attack surfaces, not as much staff, that limited staff or limited budgets. That's what I mean by it's not a fair fight. So it's why at Lumu we wanted to get into the fight and structure things around schools. I know I'm kind of rambling, but one of the things we do that I think is, a product of the industry. One, in our industry of cybersecurity, there's been a history of not playing well with others, a bunch of silos. So that's one problem. The other problem is, they have a certain structure on how they price. And my school I grew up with, the district had 1,500 students. That's a small school district, but that's a mid-market company if you took that as headcount. And a lot of the industry, that's how they price things. So they price themselves out of the education market. So that's why we've come back and we only charge with faculty and staff, even though we're protecting the whole school. So anyway, that I kind of rambled on that. I kind of got off on a tangent on you, but that's kind of the background.
So I left a bunch of it out, but I don't want to bore them.
Well, so we talk about student data. We talk about how valuable it is versus your credit card or my credit card, right? What are the attack surfaces that they're going after? What's your current threat that you're seeing to the data?
Yeah. One gap everyone has is you can't put EDRs on everything, right? So schools have a lot of things. And, you know, with the whole COVID thing, we had this whole influx of trying to, you know, find ways to teach kids remotely, you know, technology and all those kind of things. And, you know, the superintendent said, you know, get my schools back up. They didn't say get them back up securely. Right. So that's one problem. Yeah, that's what I meant by the attack surface. And, you know, it's a perfect storm of the bad guys. It used to be, you know, look, if your neighbor got ransomware or something, it had nothing to do with you, right? It was just out there in the ether of the internet. That's no longer true. I mean, you look at the attack that happened down in Dallas, you know, Dallas City got hit, then the county, then, you know, it just started spreading out in a localized area. And the reason that is the bad guys have figured out to go after the supply chain. So those software systems and stuff that everyone uses, they go after those and it's like the golden ticket, right? So you're seeing more of those sophisticated because it's nation state actors, right? They can do that. You know, this isn't someone down in their mom's basement anymore, right? So they're going after that. So as a result of that, you know, if you talk to any school, you talk to any governments in the area, they go off the same schedules. You know, that's that whole procurement, how we procure and everything right. Else. It's like, oh, hey, we pre-negotiated this. Here's the schedule. Well, the bad guys know, okay, if I exploit Acme, I'll just make something up, Acme, and I know everyone uses it, I'm just going to start hitting everyone around. So, you know, now it's kind of one of those deals when your neighbor gets hit, pay attention, right? You may be next. And it's just like in physical security in your neighborhood, you know, if your neighbor's house gets hit, you know, get a dog, you know.
The trouble with the school district is when you get hit, the attorneys tell that district not to share what happened.
Well, that's not just limited to schools. You know, we call that don't say the B word, right? Don't say the breach word until we're sure. And that, you know, as an incident response team prior to Limu, you know, that's what we would come in. Sometimes there would be, you know, there's a compromise assessment. You know, are you compromised? Are, you know, have they got you yet? Or, you know, have they, you know, if you talk about the kill chain, you know, where are they in the kill chain? You know, are you about to get a ransomware note or are they at the earlier stages? So, and, you know, and that comes, 90% of that comes in through email, believe it or not, it still does. I saw about 5% come in from, you know, either a maintenance remote port, like port 22, remote access, whatever, you know, you're, and all those systems you've got, people are doing remote maintenance on them, right?
Right.
So it's real easy to leave that open. And that's like leaving the front door open and, you know, a sign in your yard for bad guys. They can scan and find those. So, yeah, that's just a layup for them. That's low sophistication to find that and to go to walk through that door. Right. So, and I kind of lost track of where the question was. Ask your question again. I go tangent, sir.
And as you got off on a tangent, I was writing notes of another question.
Ask another tangent. Yeah, sorry, I can kind of ramble. I mean, I get excited about this when we see it. They, you know, I mentioned they go after the deal. So proximity matters. You asked about the attack surface. Well, a couple things happened. One, because of the remoteness, you got the Chrome. You know, the Chromebooks came in, and they're not. I mean, you know, they do what they're supposed to do. They're an inexpensive way of digitally letting a student, you know, interact with the classroom. Well, they're not, they're just like SCADA, if you know what SCADA is. It's got, you know, your water control systems and all those kind of things. Those are little devices that, you know, do a couple simple things, you know, like turn a valve on, turn a valve off, tell the pressure, that kind of stuff. They're not... To keep the cost down on those, they don't have a whole bunch of processing to put a bunch of security stuff, right? So that's an open gap. And, you know, cameras, printers, all that kind of stuff, you can't put EDRs on. Well, that's an attack surface. They come and bring your own device. I mean, yeah, the kids, the teachers have their phones on there. There's all kinds of different ways to come in. That's one of the things that Lumu blocks that gap. We actually see that communication with that threat actor and block it. We're not charging you for each one of them, but we're protecting it from it. So that's another, you know, look, in DoD, we use interlocking fields of fire because when people get through the gaps and get behind you, bad things happen. It's the same in cyber, right? You know, when they get, once they get past the hard, crunchy shell, you know, a lot of times it's pretty easy to move around.
Yeah, I was reminded as you were talking about the third party Las Vegas casino went down because of a fish tank thermometer that they bought off Amazon and tripped down a casino.
There you go.
And at the same time this weekend, I had a college professor complain to me because her university won't let her bring in her own devices. And I'm trying to explain that. Make sure the bad guy, but it's a necessity.
I get it. You know, the best way is to balkanize that off. I mean, just, you know, make it so that it can't have access to other parts of the network. I mean, that's what the guest network was developed for, right? You know, it's just a cesspool, right? You can't control it, whatever. But asking an overworked, understaffed technology team, yeah, and security and convenience goes like this, right? You know, multi-factor authentication isn't convenient, but it's more effective than not, right? And they found a way to get around that too. They always do. That's the thing. You know, it's a constant battle. They're always going to shift. But I always tell people, I say, look, just, you know, when they figured out how to go in through the window, you didn't stop locking the front door, right? You know, front door is your firewall, right? Okay, so now we've moved on to EDRs. Okay, they figured out how to circumvent EDRs. Doesn't mean you're not going to do EDRs. With schools, though, they can't afford to put an EDR on anything, on everything anyway. Again, I talked about how the industry, you know, prices things, right?
Right.
So what they do, and even when, you know, you'll see, it kind of comes down this way from state. They'll give you a firewall. They gave you the internet first. Now they gave you a firewall. Next, they'll give you an EDR, right? But they don't give you an EDR for everything. They give you, you know, everyone gets 10 EDRs or whatever. And so you put them on your servers and that makes sense. That's what you do what you can, right? You lock the windows you can. And then the next thing is going to be NDRs. I'm hearing states saying we're looking for network detection and response deals. So in other words, monitoring network, because there's a couple ground truths. Every attack's got to come from somewhere. It's got to come over the network, right? That's why at Lumu, that's what we watch. We're watching for, you know, we're telling you where it's coming, you know, blocking it on McAfee 3 integrations with your firewalls. So again, you don't have to do anything. You know, you're already overworked. I don't need to send you a bunch of alerts. That isn't going to work, right? I'll send you the alert, but I'm going to block it automatically for you. And then we automate the visibility of the network. So, okay, all right, this thing got in. Here's what it talked to. Here's, you know, here's who was logged in and here's what process it was used. And a lot of schools don't understand, you know, the science teacher. I've got schools that science teachers, you know, hey, you did math. You're the security guy. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, we have student schools in the Aleutians with 80 students. I mean, right. You know.
I was at a conference this last week, and one of the tech directors is a retired cop. And I grew up with him, actually. And he just said, I don't know what I'm doing. And he's a little tiny school district, about 500 kids. And he's honest about it. He's just doing the best he can.
Well, and you know, you always, whenever I was hiring people or whatever, you know, it's attitude and aptitude, right? And yeah. In security, the attitude is curiosity, because I can get, you know, certifications are good for the basis, you know, as long as they're kind of teaching you how to think. Now, when the rote memorization stuff is about useless, because whatever you're memorizing that someone codified into a book or, you know, is what they were doing. Yeah, you know, they're still doing it. I mean, they still keep using it. It's a tool in the toolkit for the bad guys, right? But it's constantly changing. What I look for is people who recognize the pattern, who thinks like the bad guy. Okay, this new thing came in. If I were going to attack it, how would I do it? You know, that kind of deal. You know, it's like, okay, you know, it's like I'm gonna try and poke holes in this thing. So once I know where the, you know, the vulnerabilities are, that's what I want. You know, it's like, okay, if I start to see this happen, I'm going to start off the klaxons. But otherwise, I call them hold my beer moments, right? You know, it's like, here, hold my beer. I'm going to go deal with this, you know.
Earlier, you talked about third-party vendors, and districts are using tons of third-party vendors nowadays, right? We all know there's a huge breach, 3, 4, 5 months ago that impacted a large percentage of America. insurance policies, cyber insurance policies, now requiring districts to force their third-party vendors to have their own insurance policy also. That was something I heard at the conference this week, too.
That sounds like a licking ice cream cone to me. You know, it's like, do you understand that? Well, it's
okay. No, I don't.
It brings up, we'll understand that. That's a military term. It's just, anyway. The self-licking ice cream cone is the insurance company saying, well, in order for me to insure you, I want you to make everyone else buy insurance. That sounds like a self-licking ice cream cone. I get it. I understand it. But it's, you know, it's good business. Hey, it's, you know, it's like the greatest marketing statement ever knew. It was a rinse and repeat, right?
And it since a lot of districts are self-insuring or they're part of insurance pool, that's kind of where it's coming from. But if you're in a small district or any size district, what do you put in place with the third-party vendors to try to hold them accountable for quick reporting of breaches, for honesty, for anything, you know, their own back door?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, you have a hard enough time policing yourself, right?
Right.
You got to go police everyone else. I mean, I tick the box. Do you have cyber insurance? Yes, no. I mean, you know, they're dealing with the same thing the schools are, right? You know, there's a reason why they self-insured because they didn't really feel like the insurance was effective, right?
Right.
It's like, you know, they're worried that, you know, all right, I paid for insurance. But, you know, this is true with any insurance. I'm not picking on the insurance deal, but it's a reality. It's like, you know how good your insurance is was when you need it. When your house burns down as you find out how good your insurance company is, right? You know, so it's a little bit of that. I know, you know, insurance is kind of in this boomerang kind of thing where they first came out and where cyber insurance looked like a great, you know, profitability thing, and they were just paying the ransom, and then they realized that's probably not a good business model. So then they rolled back around. They did the same thing your state government's doing to you. You know, we're from the government. We're here to help, right? So, okay, we're here to help. Here's a whole bunch of controls that we want you to follow to make yourself more secure. The schools are going, that's great. Where's the money? You know, it's like, you know, you gave me, and everything's derived from what's called NIST, which is NIST 171 is, you know, what the defense contractors have to follow, right?
Right.
DOD-based deal. So, you know, it's a bunch of controls. And like for a school where the science teachers, I mean, you're asking them to write disaster recovery plans and, you know, all this kind of stuff. A bunch of stuff that he or she's the only one that's going to ever look at it. You know, it's not going to happen, right? So, but it doesn't mean those are bad. You know, they're a framework, right? They're like, hey, if you follow this, it'll be better. It's true. If you follow those things and try and do those things, it's a guide. It's like, you know, what the schools have to do is they have to look at that. I got a bunch of stupid analogies, but you got to call it like kung fu, right? You know, it's like, you know, what's a face shot and what's a body shot? I can't block all the body shots, but I definitely want to block the face shots, right? All right. Mm-hmm. Or I also call it engineering your cost, right? Well, you gave me $5. Well, you got to buy a firewall first. You know, like I said, I'll get to the, you know, the trained Dobermans later. But, you know, right now it's just I'm locking the front door, right? So, you know, this is what everyone goes through. And it's not just schools. I mean, you know, be like, oh, screw it. I'm going to go out into the real world and it's going to be different. It's not because your CEOs, you know, most of them don't understand security unless you can go and explain to them, say, hey, look, you know, man, I used to do this. You know, manufacturing was a prime example. You got generational families on those things. You know, their grandfather started it, you know, and they'll drop $1 million on a depress, but won't drop $5,000 on a, you know, on cybersecurity. And you ask them, and yeah, you know, I'd get to the CEO and I go, look, what's an hour, a day, a week, a month, you know, in terms of cost, you know, if you're down, you know, what does that cost you? And they go, okay, how long does it take before the people you're supplying find other sources for what you're billing? You know, how many years did it take you to get those customers? Pretty soon the CFO's going, you know, 5,000 or 50,000 doesn't sound like a whole lot, you know,
yeah,
whatever it is, you know, so you got to be able to communicate to your upper management. And, you know, that's one of the challenges that the security team on the schools have, because they're dealing with a superintendent who's, you know, trying to budget school lunches and, you know, they, it's like spinning plates, right? You know, they've got so many things in the air and they can't let any of them drop, you know, so.
But the trouble with that is, we drill in schools, fire drills. We do earthquake drills. We do active shooter drills. How often do we ever do a cybersecurity drill where we involve the CTO, the chief budget officer, the superintendent, the school board, we don't drill up to help them understand the true impact of their decision making.
That's called a tabletop. In our world, that's called a tabletop exercise. That's built into the industry. You know, any professional services group, MSP, well, I don't know about MSP, MSP will go to MSSP to do it. But that's essentially what you do. And it's right. In that, you know, you get someone, and, you know, there's a lot of, it's like anything, there's a lot of stuff out there. It's like a deck of cards, you know, it's like that doesn't do much. Right? Get someone who's been running a instant response and have them, what we used to do, not prior, is we'd get the technical team first. We'd hammer them first, you know, and kind of get in. But then we would go and do an executive level. And they just laugh because we're, you know, the lawyers sitting there, you know, I'm going to pick on lawyers for a second. You know, they're risk averse. That's their job, right? So they're sitting there and they're really evaluating. Our technical guy's going, that's another 50,000. That's another 50,000. That he's getting mad. I'm going, this is reality. This is what's going to happen. You know, this is, they're going to speed you up. That's why, you know, they hit you on Friday at 4 o'clock. You know, they hit you on Christmas Eve. They hit you. Just as and for schools, it's just as the students come back because you're more apt to go off and just pay the ransom because you're stressed. Kids are coming in, your hair's on fire, right? And then this guy, you know, takes down the whole network. So what do I got to do to get it back out? You know, because it's a political environment. You know, the superintendent is a political animal. You know, we used to call it at NSA. We used to call it the Washington Post test, right? If this comes out in the Washington Post, am I an idiot or a victim? You don't want to be the idiot, right? And it's the same for every small tech paper, whatever, you know, if it's like, you know, you moron, you didn't buy a firewall. What's wrong with you? You know, but you know, if it comes out and say, hey, look, you know, we did what we could, you know, did what we could and didn't put any locks on the front door to pass it. But, you know, hey, we locked all the doors and windows and the guy climbed in over the roof. You know, what do you want me to do? You know, so it's, you know, that's kind of the environment you're in. You know, there is that, you know, you've heard that joke, you know, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you. There's a little bit of that, you know, that doesn't totally apply anymore, but as much as it used to, but it's still, you know, if you're the hard target, they'll go on to they'll do the weaker targets first. Why wouldn't they?
What's your experience? Is it the large district, intermediate district, or the small district that's the greatest target right now?
In terms of, because of the data record deal, let me back up a little bit. Someone once asked me, what's AI going to do to cybersecurity? I said, well, it's not going to make it more sophisticated. What it's going to do, it's going to take unsophisticated actors and put sophisticated tools in their hands. And that's what you're seeing. So you're seeing more of a volume of sophisticated attack. Because of that, you're seeing a lot more smaller schools, and they're layup. They don't have the budget. They don't have the people. They don't have they have the same attack surfaces that a big school does. Big school just has, you know, if whatever Acme, whatever software is the target, you know, to go after, it doesn't matter if I've got 80 students or 8,000, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're still gonna, you know, so that's the problem. Right. It's like, so we're seeing a lot of smaller schools and medium sized schools get hit more often. The bigger schools, you know, the bigger you get in a school district, the more it's like corporate structure. And it doesn't mean they're not going to get hit. They do. But they got more sophisticated tools because of the way school districts are. I mean, you know this, right? You know, your budget and everything is based on headcount. You know, for if I have a, you know, 5 students or 5,000, I get so much from local, so much from state, so much from federal per head, right? And that gets divided off into little percentages. You know, it goes to the bus drivers and the whatever. Well, if, you know, 5% of that goes to cybersecurity, well, 5% of $5 is a lot less than 5% of, you know, 500,000, right? You know, it's like, it's just, it's math. Sorry, that's why the same speaking.
And maybe protecting the same appliances, right?
Yeah, exactly. And expected to do it with someone, you know, I feel for the, look, you know, but I'm from a small town, right? The smartest people I know are driving a pickup truck in Southeast Kansas, right? It's true. that they're not cyber savvy, but they're really sharp people. You know, these small schools have really smart people. You know, I made a joke to one of my sales guys. He goes, man, these guys out in Wyoming are really sharp. I said, well, think about it. I said, all the dumb ones died in the winter out there. You know, it's like, you know, the genetic pool is outstanding because, you know, it's the same in Kansas, right? You know, everyone, they came across in covered wagons. The dumb ones died on the way, you know? So there's a, I'm kidding, sort of. But, you know, it to the point is, just because they're rural doesn't mean they're not intelligent. They just don't have access to a lot of the same resources everyone, you know, someone in a bigger city might have. Or there aren't, yeah, look, the guy who knew a bunch about cyber went to the NSA out of Parsons, right? You know, so there's a little bit of that. The opportunity goes to the big cities, so they have trouble finding people that do it. Doesn't mean they're not capable. You know, and a lot of times I do find really sharp people in the schools because they like the school environment. Like, say, I didn't go to NSA for the pay raise, right? I went for the mission. And there's plenty of people out there like that. You know, it's just, we just need to support them, figure out how to make their jobs easier, better, whatever, in those rural areas. That's, again, the rural is the hardest one for them because of the skill sets. That, you know, someone gets good and, you know, there's someone over in Dallas waving a bunch of money at him. You know, it's like, you know.
I'm gone. But yeah. I agree with you that you said politics. I think all security is politics. I can remember when we tried to bring in MFA and I had to deal with the teachers union, the bus driver union, the para union, because they're saying, you're going to make me do this on my own phone. And then we had to work other ways around it, right? It's all political. It's pain versus pleasure, in essence, or cost versus the risk assessment.
Well, and you know, I tell young engineers that, you know, like, no one's want to move up. And I said, you sure you want my job? You know, it's like, you see what I deal with? You know, you're doing the fun stuff down in the technology. You got into that because you like that. Now you're up in the politics. And the politics is just what I, you know, you got to come up with ways to tell the CFO, hey, let me define this in your terms. You know, it's not, you know, as security professionals, we tend to drop a bunch of three-letter acronyms and ask for money, right? And it's one of the things that Lumbu does that is really popular, both for us. Yeah, the insurance companies love us because it's an artifact. We generate an executive report every week for them, and it's written at an executive level. And it's showing, you know, we provide labeling so you can see which parts of the network are getting hit. But because of we integrate with everything in the network, right? Mm-hmm. Or in the security stack. So this report basically is showing how the whole system is working together. It's not just Lumen. It's, you know, how you firewall, your endpoint, you know, all of it work together to block and stuff. So I call it the why you pay me report, because it's like, you know, you're not secure by dumb luck. You know, you're secure because we're doing, we being the person in the school or whatever, we're doing this stuff. And by the way, is, you know, here's how it's all working together and here's what's stopping. Here's kind of your constant state, you know. So, and that's what, look, you know, I come from DOD and intelligence background. You know, they don't have a lot of time for this kind of psycho babble. So it's like, I wonder, you know, I got, you know, 30 seconds of fame or infamy, you know, it's like, get it done. You know, so it's kind of that kind of, all right, good. We're all right. You know, when this changes, then you and I are going to have a longer conversation, right? You know, so that's kind of how it's set up. It's auto generated. You know, you mentioned insurance before. We have insurance companies with us that are starting to push us to their fields because they have a tangible asset, what we call an artifact, that says you're paying attention, you're doing monitoring, detection, and response, right? And you're doing it at a price that these schools or these manufacturing small businesses can afford, right?
So I'm going to bring this back to the reason why we do what we do, which is kids. So yeah. I'm a parent. I know my kids' data is going to be out there on the dark web, right? I know it's going to be sold. If you think it's not going to be sold, you're a fool. What should we be doing as a parent?
You know, one of the things I did with my kids is I said, look, regardless of what you think, if you put it on the net, it's always on the net. It ain't going away. You may think it's going away, but if you keep that in your mindset, you know, it's kind of don't ready, fire, aim. You know, it's really, you know, ready, aim, fire. You know, it's like, you know, it's kind of like that deal. You know, this works for your career too. You know, hey, before you send that email, stop, take a breath. I'll pretty read the email. You really want to do that? Okay, yeah, then hit it. You know, So, you know, if you have some of that emotional intelligence, because it's crazy on social, I feel bad for kids. I really do. You know, you and I grew up, the bully, okay, you know, if you wouldn't stop a bully, you had to do what you do to a bully. You know, you didn't stand up to him. Good luck in social. I mean, you know, it's anonymous. It's whatever. It's all these things. You know, there's 1,000 bullies out there now, right? And there's really no, you know, privacy. Like I said, you know, the kids, you know, information, whatever is all out there. And now you got deep fakes. You know, that's even scarier. I just feel for them. The main thing is just be careful. You know, don't do it. I don't have a Facebook account. I proudly announce that. You know, it's like, you know, one, the people I work for wouldn't let you have one at one point. And then by the time I could have it, I didn't want it. You know, it's like, look, I love pictures of your dog, but I don't have time to comment on it 18 times a day. And don't get mad at me. So it's easier just not to have it, right?
If you had some young teens, would you have a family identity theft plan? Would you be purchasing something to help you monitor the web?
Where do you? I've got all my credit locked down. I've got theirs is locked down too. It's like that, you know, no one's opening a credit card without me unleashed. Now it's a pain. You know, you walk in and go, hey, you could get, you know, $100 off if you got a credit card. Yeah, but that's going to take a little while. So it probably works in, you know, both ways. Like, well, that's, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, they, the OPM lost my data. Anyone with a clearance got all their data lost. So, you know, I had someone file unemployment on me and stuff. So I had to lock down all my accounts and stuff. So that's what I do with them. I also have, you know, I get an EDR solution for the family. You know, I got one that license, I put it out, and or some security professional. So, you know, I watch it, you know, if it tells me something, I'll go scan their device or whatever. Yeah, right. That's for grandma and grandpa too. You know, that's, you know, you feel bad. They pay for my computer science degree. So so I'm tech support, right? Hey, you know, here's my Kindle. I'm like going, I'll figure it out. Give it to me.
But that's what when I'm around some of my friends who are older than me, and I'm trying to talk to them even about their simple iPhone security, they don't understand, and they're clicking on links, and they're such rich targets for a phishing scam. And then corporate America buys into it and sends them links.
Really good at it. Yes. You know, with a pen to, I mean, if you want to get 90% hit rate on a deal, just tell them, you know, if they don't do this, your paycheck's not going in at the end of the week or something. Yeah, it's almost impossible. You know, expecting the humans to stop. You want to train them. You want to, you know, we have a start, you know, kind of a saying, every man a sensor, right? Every person a sensor. So, you know, everyone, and that's how, as an instant response, that's how you find out, hey, my cursor was moving. And I wasn't doing it. Okay, let's do a compromise assessment. Let's figure out what's going on. But so it's kind of the same with the email. And we have an email feature we'll connect to everything. So what we do is we don't block your email. What we're doing is we're looking for those same bad locations in the email, because that's what the email's trying to get you to do. It's trying to get you to go to a bad location, and they're going to infect you or download an attachment. What we do is we keep track of that. And if someone clicks on that link, we block it at the firewall, just like we would block any communication with that bad actor. But because we know about it, we've associated the email with the alert. What that does is basically allows you to analyze that email. They say, okay, what technique are they using to try and get to my teachers or whatever, you know, to get people to make complaints? You know, is it that what I just said? Is it saying you can go out there, you look, your paychecks are fine, don't click on these links. But you can also see the pattern. You can see it went to me, and then it went to you, and you, and you, and you. Okay, I got a business email compromise. I need to get Jeff to reset his password, and I need to check those other accounts that I talked to. So it gives you a secondary action to keep putting out the fire. Yeah, you put out the fire, make sure the embers don't keep going, right? And that's kind of the way cybersecurity works. Yeah, you stamp out you put the house out, you save the basement, right? And you stop the house from burning down, but then you got to, you know, make sure it doesn't start the houses next door.
Let's talk about Lumen and Value just for a second. I'm a Microsoft district. I pay for all my security licensing, Defender. Why Lumu? Am I double dipping? Am I redundant?
No, in fact, it's enhancing. We integrate with Defender. And what we do, because we connect via APIs, what we're doing is we're using what that device can do to block, you know, or what that, so Defender is one of those ones that has extended features, right? Right. So when we don't go in and change Defender, we don't go in and change your firewall. We tell the firewall, hey, there was communications with this bad guy, you should block it. Then we go to the EDR and say, hey, this stuff came in from this location. By the way, we know that threat actor, and this is what they're trying to install. So if they come in from another direction, the EDR already knows to block that. Same with Defender. You know, it'll go, oh, okay. And, you know, it adds that to its list and it looks for that, right? And it can even sandbox, you know, the item or whatever, you know, the endpoint and stuff. So no, it's not double dipping at all. It's actually getting rid of those silos, because as a security professional, you have to go to the firewall F check, you have to go to the endpoint check. You're the one that's stitching that story together, right? You're the one that, you know, any cyber attack is not one event. It's a series of events. It's what we call the kill chain, right? So you have to sit there and recognize, okay, I saw this. Okay, I think they're right here, right? Well, we're doing that for you. We're connecting all that and going, okay, we're blocking it up front. I tell people, you know, look, one of the operational efficiencies we provide, yeah, I said, got to come from somewhere. It's got to come over the network. Well, because that one location, say you're the bad guy, right? And I block you. Well, before I blocked you, you were messing with 15, 20, 30 different devices, multiple contacts with them and stuff. Well, the reporting on that back end, you're going to get an alert for each one of those. That could be 30 of them, right? I just stopped it with one alert. You know, one, I went to the firewall, blocked it. That no longer exists. You know, we'll tell you where we had contacted, but it's no longer happening anymore. So from an efficiency standpoint, we're at the front of the funnel. We're at the choke point, right? So we're stopping it up there before you have to deal with 30 of them down here. And, you know, down here is down in the weeds. That's that application layer. You know, EDRs are looking for behaviors. And this is part of one of the reasons why they're being evaded. AI is helping with this. Is you remember Symantec?
You know, yes.
Great product. You know, it was innovative when it first came out. There's that word. When it first came out, it was great, right? And then the bad guys figured out how to automatically flip a bit. So, and the way hash is done, sorry, you told there'd be no math in this, right? But the way hashes work is that it's a formula that goes, I'm going to read this whole thing and I'm going to come up with some mathematical number based on a formula. And here's the number, right? And if it matches, that's the virus. That's the bad thing. Well, by flipping one bit, that hash just totally changes and it's not the same thing. In behavior alerts, you know, when the endpoint are looking, you know, if I see A, B, C, and D, I'm going to throw an alert up. Yeah, this looks like an attack. Okay. No, well, now AI is doing the same sort of thing. They're changing behaviors in there. So an A, B, G, but okay, that's not it. It doesn't match. Or I'm going to set a much lower priority because it doesn't totally match. Right. So that's starting. It's one of the ways they're evading it is with that AI is working to do that automation to change it up so it doesn't trigger the EDRs. Right. And now it doesn't mean you don't still do EDRs because that's, you know, that's 5% of the attacks that are coming at it because in most cases they can get in with the others. Right. You know, the bad guys use the easiest tool. You know, if a hammer will do it, they do use a hammer. You know, they don't get to the scalpel until later on. And then, you know, that becomes motivation, right? It's like, am I motivated to put in the effort to have to use the scalpel? That's what I meant by the, you know, outrun the bear, right? It's like, you know, if the guy just really just wants, he can make plenty of money just run around hitting things with a hammer. He's just going to keep hitting it with the hammer, right?
Right.
You know, if it takes five times as long to do the scalpel deal and he can make, you know, 10 times more money by just, you know, hitting all the small schools, for example, that's what they're going to do. Volume-based business.
If I was a district and I had my tape backups back for a year, so I know I could go back and revert to clean data, would you, but it's going to shut me down for weeks? What would you do about the ransom?
Well, first off, they're not dumb. They know that. That's the first thing to go for your backups. Yeah. In fact, hey, that incident response group, one of the things we did that was different than a lot of ones like, you know, who the insurance company would send in. A lot of times when the insurance comes in, their job, that what they you paid for, it's for them to go in and get the bad guy out. They're not paid to get you back up. and the bad guys went in there with a meat axe. You know, I know Austral's, you know, working off paper for 6 months. I mean, you know, the rural hospitals closed down because of, you know, cyber attacks, right? Which is sad. You know, it's hard to keep a rural hospital open. You know, for the same reason you don't have cyber people and, you know, and the same level of cyber support out in, you know, VFE Kansas, right? Or Wyoming or whatever. It's the same with medical. So I kind of go off on a tangent again. But the point being is I'm stalling for time to get back to the question.
Which is about paying ransom if you maybe have a clean backup back a year.
Well, yeah. Sure, so they're going to go for the back. The first thing they do is go and find the backups. And the way we helped a lot of people, we had an infrastructure team that got on the planes. I kept the, what I call the 10-pound heads, the, you know, the white hats that would have been really nasty black hats, sitting there hand fighting the bad guys. Because once you stop them, they try and get around you. So these guys are, you know, that's why we provide the MITRE attack method. That's like, it's like, okay, if I stopped them here, here's all the techniques they're going to use. That's what the MITRE attack method is about. So these guys would hand fight them, but the infrastructure guys would go and get things back up while these guys were cleaning it up. You know, they'd start to, okay, it's good, bring it up. But while they were there, they would discover, like, you know, records that the customer didn't even know they had. They're on, you know, RAS somewhere, whatever. And, you know, we'd go and say, hey, look, you're going to lose 30 days of data, but we can bring up this other data. You don't have to pay the ransomware if you don't, because we hate paying the ransomware, you know. And it's like, and they go, well, no, we can live with that. It's okay, fine. You know, we got it. You know. So the point being is, your backups, if you can get to it remotely, guess what? You know, if you have them in some sort of hard state and they're scanned and whatever, you know, they're clean, they don't have a, you know, something installed on them, that works. Now, that's pretty sophisticated. It's fairly expensive. You know, it's like security and money too, right? So if you have that, that's your best defense against having to pay the ransom.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yes, you know, your backups are key. That's why the bad guys go after them first.
That was actually in the district I led. One of the first things we got superintendent out for, he paid for the 1 year full of air gap backups.
Okay, air gap. As long as it's air gap, I mean, you still have to do some things because they see that. They can see when you back them up. You know, so if they're sitting there, if they're persisting, that's why with schools, you know, it's kind of a smash and grab. A lot of times they're not going to sit there and do an advanced, you know, an APT, an advanced persistent threat on a little school in Southeast Kansas. They're not going to waste that much time, right? So making it more difficult like that is key. Now, if it's a high value target and there's a ton of money and whatever, you know, a bank or whatever, you know, Bank of America, yeah, they'll sit in there for a year. They don't care. You know, they're waiting, they're watching, you know, and if it's a nation state, that's the game, right? They're sitting until it's their advantage to go after it. That's a possibility with schools too. You know, they could put that in there and go after them in one sweep in an infrastructure hit, but that's less likely. In intelligence, we always work off percentages. You know, nothing's 100%, right? You know, it's like, what's the probability that this is going to happen, right? So, you know, you can weigh the probability on, you know, risk, reward, gain, all these kind of things. So, what's the gain of, you know, doing a bunch of advanced persistent threats across a bunch of small schools, right? It's not there.
Well, one last thing I'd like you to define for me, you're talking about, you keep bringing up nation state actors. From your perch, from your experience, are we as a nation working against the nation state actors when they're coming after our student data?
Yeah, but at a strategic level, we always have. You know, I won't share too much, but that's always been the game. I mean, that's why, you know, a lot of it's becoming more public now, you know, as we do it, but that's, you know, and the hardest part is attribution, right? You know, the bad guy doesn't, you know, do everything from his desk. He's going through grandma's laptop before he goes, you know, it's like, let's say, you know, whenever you saw a real noisy attack and, you know, coming from Russia, we said it's the Chinese pretending to be Russian. Right. You know, it's just the way of the world, right? You know, that's the hardest part
with the whole internet, it's attribution. Like, I'm gonna send a virus back. You might have just nuked someone's grandma. You know, you know, it's like, it's not that easy. They're not that dumb. You know, you see on movies where it's bouncing all over the world and stuff.
Right.
That's called Tor. That's the onion router is what TOR stands for. But that's a remote access, you know, an obfuscation. You know, I always tell people, I said, look, and we identified Tor in your network. If someone's talking to a Tor node, we tell you, because I said, look, you know, someone walks into your place with a ski mask on, nothing good's going to happen, right? Yeah, well, that's Tor. There is no good reason for someone in your organization to be using Tor. They're obfuscating where they're going and where they're coming from. So it's just assume it's bad. You know, you'll be 99.99999% right. I can't think of even the 0.001 instance in a school where you should be obfuscating where you're going. That's good.
Jeff, thank you for giving me your time.
All right. Today. Yeah, I'm psychobabble. That's it. You probably won't invite me back. You need to schedule another hour. I'm not even sure you got what you want to talk about, but pull the string. You know,
I just wanted to hear you talk. There you go. You are entertaining. I'm gonna start looking for my next difference. You're the keynoter.
No, happy to. Happy. Thanks for having me, and you know, thanks for letting me kind of bloviate on everything. Talk about Lumu. We really do feel like we're helping a lot of schools. We're up in schools that didn't have this kind of help. And it's starting to come down from the state level too. I mean, you know, I've talked to several state board of education, and not board of education, the education group, the security IT people, and they're starting that the states are starting to push out NDR. And, you know, look, we feel that, I call that the box question, right? What are you? And I said, well, we totally fill the NDR box, but we do a lot more. We automate, we look at your email, we do more things. But if you're trying to tick a box, which sometimes that's what it comes down to, we totally fill the NDR box. So, and states are starting, that's the next one. You know, they gave you firewalls, they gave you EDRs, now they're starting to give you NDRs. So we're talking to state organizations about that. We're starting to go and meet their tech directors and stuff like that to talk about how Lumu can help schools. You know, we're really strong in a bunch of different states across the country. So,
well, I know in the E-rate authorization, there's some discussion and push to put security under E-rate also.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, it evolves, you know, the speed of government, right? E-rate was there to get internet to people who didn't have internet. Yeah. That's mainly what it started out as. And eventually went, oh, shoot, we probably ought to give them a firewall. But still, they got a firewall. And then the next was, well, okay, what's next in the evolution? EDR. And now it's NDR, and that's how it's rolling. Well, you know, the way government works is there was a grant that came out. Of course, it was based on the percentage of student lunches that are subsidized, which is the way of, you know, in the underprivileged schools and stuff. It came out as that, maybe from about $200 million. You know, it sounds like a lot of money until you divide it by schools, right? You know, it doesn't go very far once you start splitting it up. You know. But, you know, at least that's their first step. Okay. They started out, I know NDRs were part of that, you know, so that was their first rollout. Hopefully they'll keep expanding that. The only cautionary tale I would tell you on government is, you know, we've run into states where, you know, they're trying to, we're going to provide everything to you. And you go, you know, that's kind of like, okay, Miss America. Yeah. I want world peace too, but what's the implementation plan? You know, and that's what they got. It actually kind of acted, I won't pick on the state, but it actually acted as a hindrance, because schools, you know, superintendent fault, state's going to pay for that. Yeah. You know, well, state's going to pay for that. They go, we're on almost year two. How long are you going to wait before, you know, if you get a hit, is the Washington Post going to go, well, it was okay, they didn't do anything because they were waiting on the state. Is that really going to happen? You know, so it kind of becomes how you communicate with your leadership. So look, what if, okay, they're going to do it, but what about we take these mitigating steps? Because, you know, I haven't found, you know, too many politicians that jump in front of the bullet, right? You know, it's like, they're pretty good at, you know, avoiding it. So, you know, and that regardless of which side of the political spectrum you're on, right? You know, I'm not making a political statement. I'm saying, with that, you know, it's kind of, I was saying, you know, came out of some movie I saw, you know, you want to live, get off the beach, right? You can't just sit in the foxhole. You know, the inbound round's coming. You know, it's just a matter of time, you know, so get off the, you know, go fight, you know, get in the fight, you know, get up there, do something about it. You know, you're going to get hit either way, you know, or you may get hit either way. I'd rather get hit fighting than sitting in the foxhole.
That's a great place to end
it. Okay, all kinds of DOD there. And with that,
happy news.
Do something. That's just, that's simple, right? Do something.
It's do something. Don't, it's no fun being a victim, you know? No. It's just, so definitely no fun when you don't do anything. You know, no one's got, you know, like, you know, everyone will feel sorry for it. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, well, I blasted for 15 minutes, you know?
Okay.
Now I gotta clean this mess up. Yeah. So anyway,
it's a mess. I don't want to clean up. We're into a friend this weekend who hasn't slept in 6 months trying to clean up that mess. And I don't want to go through that trauma, and I don't want anyone to go through that trauma.
Well, and you know, you deal with schools. I mean, it goes beyond, oh, screw it, I'll just go get another job. You know, the CISO merry-go-round. All right. Yeah, sure. We got it. Yeah. You're the sacrificial lamb out in the commercial world a lot of times. Yeah, we got a hit. You know, it's like throw away the shield, throw away the CISO, get a new CISO, you know, and then don't give them money to block it. But in schools, I mean, I find, you know, as a higher percentage of the people that are in IT and security in schools, you know, a big reason why they're there is because they care. You know, it's not just, oh, it didn't get, you know, I'll go home. They are staying there all night because they care, you know, and it, you know, it's much better not to have to deal with that. You know, that's one of the things we sell at Lumu is like, look, peace of mind. You get to go home and sleep at night. You know, it's in testimonials on our webpage from schools. If, you know, why schools buy Lumu? It's like, yeah, I get to go sleep at night. I can deal with this on Monday when I get in because those guys automatically block it. So,
yeah. Somebody else is there on Christmas Eve, of course.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah. Who's on that wall? Right. You know, that old, you know, kind of with the DOD and the soldiers abroad, you know, who's on the wall, who's watching the wall while you're, you know, enjoying the turkey and the eggnog. Right.
Right. So
it's the same with schools.
Okay. Take care. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it. Really.
And I appreciate you working with me and trying to get this done. So have a good day and stay safe.
You bet. Thanks, Mark.
Bye.
And thank you, Jeff. You are quite the storyteller, and your experience is invaluable to those of us trying to protect K-12 against the bad guys. Just like to remind everybody that Micro will be at ACPE in May, and in addition, we are holding TechFest East in Spokane on April 25th. It's a free conference. We'll have wonderful insights. Keynotes are incredible. And also a couple sessions on AI. So I'd love to invite everybody to go to the Micro K-12 website and sign up for TechFest East 2025. Or if you're listening to this later this summer, remember we do have our TechFest north of Seattle in October. And we're going to be down in Oregon near Salem also in the month of October. So have a great week, everyone. And stay tuned for our next episode of Vetted by Mark Vetter.